Monitor now invites you to Meet the Press, America's press conference of the year, winner of every major award in its field. Today's guests on Meet the Press will be two of the most successful political party chairmen of this generation, James A. Farley and Leonard W. Hall. We'll bring you today's program in a moment.
This is Herbert Kaplow, NBC News. The center of national attention in this election year is the campaign for the White House. But there are also scores of Senate, House, and governorship races of nationwide significance. This election night, more people will be tuning to NBC radio and television for results in all the contests, national and local. Through the long, exciting months since the first primary last March, it's been NBC News that provided the most complete, most watched and listened to coverage of the political story. Now, the climax of that story is at hand. Chet Huntley, David Brinkley, and the entire NBC News team are ready to report the results. Thousands of men and women will be at their posts throughout the nation. And in NBC's Election Central, the world's most advanced election result computers will be in operation. It all adds up to two things for Election Day. First, be sure to vote. Then, stay with NBC radio and television for the fastest, clearest, and most interesting report of the results.
Through your United Fund or Community Chest, your money goes far to help people. Here's how, says the Chad Mitchell Trio.
Just give one skill right, take great delight in knowing that United dollars have great might. Remember, one gift works many wonders, so let human kindness have its day. Start by pledging, the best way for giving, give the United way.
And now, Meet the Press. Today's guests are James A. Farley, former chairman of the Democratic National Committee, and Leonard W. Hall, former chairman of the Republican National Committee, now a member of the Goldwater-Miller Strategy Committee. Our panel consists of Lawrence E. Spivak, Edward Folliard of the Washington Post, David Broder of the Washington Star, and Richard Harkness of NBC News. Ned Brooks is our moderator.
Our guests today on Meet the Press are two of the most successful political party chairmen of this generation, James A. Farley and Leonard W. Hall. Mr. Farley was chairman of the Democratic National Committee during the first 8 years of President Franklin D. Roosevelt's administration. Through the years, he has continued to serve the Democratic Party in an advisory capacity. Mr. Hall was chairman of the Republican National Committee under President Dwight D. Eisenhower. He is now a member of the Goldwater-Miller Strategy Committee. We'll have the first question now from Lawrence E. Spivak, permanent member of the Meet the Press panel.
Mr. Hall, the latest polls, and almost without exception, predict a landslide victory for President Johnson. Do you have any good reason for challenging those polls?
Well, Mr. Spivak, back in 1956 and 1960, as chairman and manager of those two campaigns, I had all the information at my fingertips. I had not only my private polls, but I also had reports in from the field men and so on. Then I was chosen to give the prediction for the party. On yesterday, I see that Dean Birch was given the job of predicting for us, and he has said that we're going to be surprised. Barry Goldwater is going to be the next president of the United States. Mr. Birch, I know, has all the information, and I'm going out and work hard to see to it that what he says comes into being.
Have you any idea what he bases his prediction on? Is it just hunch, or
are there some
facts that he goes on?
No, I think, Mr. Spivak, there are more workers in the field today than there ever have been. I would say that there must be close to 500,000 Goldwater field men in the different states, and more than likely have contacted 2 or 3 million people. And I think he's basing a lot of his information and his prospects on what has come back from those interviews with the 2 or 3 million people.
Now, Mr. Hall, you're a political pro who's been around for a long time. You must have some idea how this campaign has been going from the people you've talked with, from what you've read, and from what you've observed. What's your own prediction?
I haven't, as I say, I haven't seen a state poll. I haven't talked with field men. And just as people relied on me in 1956 and 60, I'm going to rely on Mr. Birch.
Well, let me put it one other way. Senator Goldwater the other day predicted he could win the greatest political, he could win with the greatest political upset of this century. Do you really think that's possible?
I would say that's in line with what Mr. Birch is saying after he has received information from the field, and I'm not going to disagree with it.
Well, Mr. Farley, I see if I can get a little more out of you. I seem to have gotten virtually nothing out of Mr. Hall. You predicted the other day that the Johnson-Humphrey ticket will carry 48 states. Now, even Chairman Bailey hasn't claimed more than 47 states. What do you base that prediction?
I think he'll carry not only 48 states, but also the District of Columbia. I said last February that, in my judgment, President Johnson would not lose over six states. I said it again many times during the convention in Atlantic City. Now, that's long before these polls began to be shown, and I sincerely believe that the polls are accurate as polls can be, and they're never very far off. I thought they were great when our side was winning, and when we were losing, they didn't appeal to me too much, but they have a way of being quite accurate when the votes are finally counted.
You evidently haven't talked to Mr. Dean Birch, have you?
No, and unfortunately, I've never met him, but I've talked with a lot of other people, and I've been around long enough to know when a slide is on, it doesn't stop at state lines. And that's the reason I believe that President Johnson and Humphreys will carry Georgia and South Carolina and even Louisiana, which some people think are doubtful.
Mr. Farley, you've made a prediction on the number of states the president will carry. What about the popular vote? What's your prediction on the size of his majority?
Well, I saw references to the fact that they might poll approximately 70 million votes. And going down to only giving the president, say, 60% of that, and I think he will get more than 60% of the total vote, that would give him a lead of approximately 14 million votes, and I think he will get that and even more.
Wouldn't that be the largest majority in the history of our time?
I would think so. President Roosevelt got around 9 or 10 million, as I recall. That's a long time ago, though my figures may not be accurate. But this will be the greatest victory ever received by a nominee for the presidency in the entire history of the Republic.
We'll continue the questions now with Mr. Broder.
Mr. Hall, it's been about 32 years now since the Republican Party developed within its own ranks a man who could lead the party to a presidential victory. If Senator Goldwater loses Tuesday, do you think we have to face the fact that the GOP is really washed up?
Why, of course not. I think Jim Farley will agree with me. I was in politics back when Al Smith was beaten in 1928, and I remember the flowers they put on the grave of the Democratic Party at that time. I remember 1936 when Jim was right and the Republicans only carried two states, why they buried the Republican Party. No, I think when this election's over, you're going to have two flourishing political parties, and really, only for the past few years, two flourishing political parties with offices going on every day in every 50 states of the Union.
If Senator Goldwater loses, where would you expect the leadership for the next 4 years in the Republican Party to reside?
I'm not worried about leadership when we have men like Scranton, Romney, Percy, Hatfield, men like Ev Dirksen and others. I hope I haven't missed some, but many others. As long as we have that class of men in the party, and along with Senator Goldwater, I have no fear about leadership.
As a party regular, what's your view about the Republicans like Romney and Kuchel and Keating in New York who have refused to support their party's nominee this year?
I'm sorry that they have not done that, but this is nothing new in political history. It's happened down through the ages. In fact, in my own state of New York, one of the greatest Democrats walked out on FDR. I refer to Al Smith. Well, I think that our umbrella, or tent, as you might call it, will be big enough to take in all of those people at any time, so far as our party is concerned.
Mr. Folliard.
Yeah. Mr. Farley, do you agree with Mr. Hall that the Republican Party will stage a comeback, that we will again someday have a strong two-party system?
Yes, I agree that the Republican Party will stage a comeback. I don't know how fast it can come back. The Democrats came back rather quickly after 28. But some of the names that Mr. Hall mentioned may not be given consideration after Tuesday's election. Mr. Percy is in trouble, and Mr. Romney is in trouble, and I've got the third one you mentioned. He may be in trouble, too. So some of these candidates who, Scranton isn't in trouble, he's still around, and he's one of the few men who are doing all they can for his party, and justly so. But they'll come back because I believe in the two-party system. I like to see my party in power. But this country has a way of changing its administrations from time to time, and it will again. I hope not too soon, however.
You must have noticed, Mr. Farley, that Mr. Hall, enlisting men who might help the party to come back, that is, listing Republicans, mentioned men who might be called moderates. He did not mention anybody, as I understand, who is enthusiastic about Senator Goldwater. Would you expect that if the Republic, that the so-called moderates would regain control of the Republican Party?
Well, I'll make a very frank observation. In my opinion, they'll only come back into power by having leadership from what a man who might be known as a real organization Republican. The question of liberals or conservatives or moderates, those are terms that I think are thrown about rather loosely. They'll come back with a nominee who is recognized as a real Republican who thoroughly believes in the Republican Party and its principles and will so see.
Do you include Senator Goldwater as an organization Republican?
I would consider him as an organization Republican, but his defeat will be so overwhelming, in my judgment, he isn't going to have much to do with the resurrection of the party.
Could I comment on that?
Sure.
As I say, there's things happening in this field which I think are going to cause some surprises, and I think indicate that our currents, which cannot be fully determined at the present time. For instance, in the average campaign, you have from 50 to 80,000 contributors. Believe it or not, in this campaign, the Goldwater campaign, there are going to be 2 million separate contributors. In the average campaign, if you get $1 million from people in contributions under $10, that's high. I was told yesterday morning when I came down here that this time there'll be better than $6 million in this campaign in contributions under $10. So there are things happening here that I think, I just can't gauge the current, and I'm not going to attempt to do it, but there are things here that you just can't pass aside at the present time.
Mr. Harkness.
Mr. Hall, let's go for a moment to this control of the Republican Party. Back in 1948, Tom Dewey snatched defeat from Harry Truman. You and I were together out at Des Moines. That's when the Taft wing of the party wanted to throw out Hugh Scott as chairman, make the senator, now senator, the scapegoat of the party. That was the conservatives trying to take over from the so-called moderates of those days. Now, do you think that the moderates, Senator Case, for instance, Keating, and some of these people you've named, that they are going to make an attempt to oust Dean Birch and take back the machine of the Republican Party?
Let me say this. You start on the assumption, of course, that Senator Goldwater isn't going to win, and I don't accept that assumption.
Well, let's do it for this.
It's a nifty question. But my feeling is this, and I've been around in national politics for 40 years now, and I think no matter what happens, win or lose, you're going to have fights with respect to the position of the party, with respect to who is ahead of the national committee. So I think that's just normal for the game if there are some contests in that respect, yes.
Pardon me, let me break in for a second. The leadership in the Republican Party must come from men who have supported Senator Goldwater in this campaign. In my judgment, it can come successfully from those who have been very, well, haven't made any contribution to his success.
Well, that's good advice from a Democrat to the Republican Party. Whether it's wise enough to take it, I don't know. Another thing on this whole campaign, Mr. Hall, do you think that there is an Eastern establishment, so-called, in your party, and tied in with what the Goldwater people call the Rat Fink Eastern Press?
Let me say this. If there is an Eastern establishment, I've been a part of it, because I was one of the first men for Dewey, and I guess they said he got the Eastern establishment. I put that in quotes together. Really, there's no such thing, because when we started to work for Tom Dewey, we'd go out to Oklahoma, we'd go out to New Mexico, and we'd gather in the strength out there and tie it to us in New York. But the so-called Eastern establishment of New York wouldn't have been worth a nickel if we hadn't gone out and gotten support from across the country. So I say to you, no candidate can win a nomination or get anywhere unless he has a general broad support all across the country.
Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Farley, there have been charges that this is one of the dirtiest campaigns in our political history. Do you go along with that?
Well, every campaign, there's always accusations of that kind. I don't know whether this is any more dirtier, to use the word, than other campaigns. The campaign against Mr. Roosevelt in 1932, in part, was a dirty campaign. In 1936, it got very dirty because they tried to make it appear that he was an ill man, and a lot of things were said that you wouldn't want to discuss. All campaigns are dirty, if you may use the word. People get their tempers high, and that's all right. After this is over, the next Tuesday and Wednesday morning, the American people will settle back, and they'll proceed under the president, and a lot of these things will be forgotten, and justly so.
Mr. Hall, do you think this has been a particularly dirty campaign?
Well, I think there's been a little more than usual, and I was a little bit surprised today in the read in the paper that Mr. Humphrey stated that he didn't think the campaign had been on the proper intellectual level, and it recalled to my mind the first statement he made when he was down at Lyndon Johnson's ranch, when he said he stepped on the Republican platform. I also recall that during our convention, Pat Brown, the governor, said it had the stench of Nazism, of fascism. I think there's been too much of that, But I agree with Jim that the day after the election, all those things are forgotten.
Your judgment is that it's been dirty on one side, but
very clean on the other.
Some
of those words, I think there's been a little bit more. It started from Pat Brown, it started from Humphrey, but there's been too much loose use of words by like fascism and Nazism on both sides.
Mr. Broder.
Mr. Farley, I'd like to ask you a question as a New York Democrat for a moment. I assume that you're supporting Robert Kennedy in his Senate campaign.
Yes, I am. I'm a regular Democrat. I always support the nominees of my party.
I'd like to ask you, as a general proposition, what you think about the idea of importing candidates across state lines.
Well, I think that's all academic now. He's been nominated. He's going to be elected. Any opinion that I may have on that doesn't mean a thing now. He's the nominee of the party. He was selected under the rules of the party organization, according to law, and he's going to win. He's going to be a successful candidate. I wasn't consulted by the leaders of the party. I haven't been for years up there, so I have no complaint about that. But he's going to be the next senator, and in my judgment, based on the vote that President Johnson will receive, he could be elected by anything from 300,000 to 500,000. I'm inclined to think it'd be nearer 5 than 3.
Mr. Hall is a New York Republican.
May I say this? I think it's a sort of a sad day in our history when someone can come into a state on a short notice such as this and run for a Senate seat. It seems to me that from here on in, we'll more than likely see more of this in the smaller states in the Union. Someone whose father has left him $10 million will decide he wants to be a senator from someplace. I hope the situation is corrected by an amendment to the Constitution. Now, with respect to who's going to win up there, I think it's a touch-and-go thing. About a month ago, I thought Kennedy was ahead at the beginning of his campaign. I think Keating has come up, but right at the moment, I think it's a touch-and-go proposition. But I'm happy to hear you say, Jim, that without too much enthusiasm, you're for the nominees of your party.
No, with enthusiasm. I always vote the ticket and voted straight. I've never wavered at any time. I've had my problems and difficulties within my party, but I preach party harmony and party loyalty all my life, and that's the way I've always carried through, and I'm going to carry through to the bitter end.
Just kept you a happy man, too.
That's right.
Mr. Folliard.
Mr. Hall, last week, some religious leaders, Catholic, Protestant, and Jewish, issued a statement saying that the case of Walter Jenkins should not have been made an issue in this campaign. Do you agree with their position?
Well, may I say this? I think you newspaper men made it an issue because it was published in the newspapers, and as soon as that was done, any incident like that becomes an issue. Now, it's one of those tragedies in somebody's life that you don't like to talk about, but I'd like to clear up this one point. There has been some question whether a person with a record like that could have been in the Eisenhower administration. I can say this to you today, that every person who went into the White House under Dwight D. Eisenhower was checked by the FBI before he or she went into the White House. So no one with that type of record could have gotten into the White House. But it's an issue, I think, because the newspapers made it an issue, bound to be, the moment it became public.
Yeah. What do you think of the value of the morality in government issue? Do you think it's been effective, that it has swayed many people? I mean, the issue in general.
I think it's an issue. I think it's an issue, Mr. Farley, but I think the main issue in this campaign is the trend in which we're going. And I think perhaps it was said better by Norman Thomas a couple of months ago in Minnesota than maybe any Republican can say it. He said this, that Barry Goldwater must be beaten or it will stop the progress of socialism in America. I think that's the overwhelming issue in this campaign, socialism in America. I think surely that Hubert Humphreys is a socialist, and I think we're going down that road, and in my opinion, the people now have a chance to put a brake on that course we're taking by voting for Barry Goldwater. That's the main issue in this campaign.
May I say a word?
Yes, Mr. Farley.
I disagree with my good friend, Mr. Hall, that Humphreys is a socialist. I've known Humphreys a long time. I've known his father before him. I think he's a very capable person. I think that the president used excellent judgment when he selected him as his nominee, and I'm sure by the manner in which he conducts himself in that office, he'll more than justify the confidence that will be placed in him by the American people.
Did you know, Jim, though, that I understand that he alone has introduced bills, just one senator, that would have cost, since he's been in office, some $77 billion. And when he came to the Senate, he said, I'm known as a spender. You haven't seen anything yet. So I think when you speak of a man who wanting to appropriate and spend that kind of money and says you haven't seen anything yet, I think that's taking us down the socialist road.
Well, that might have been a light observation he made. Now, they talk about senators. Senator Borah had the reputation of being one of the greatest senators we ever had in this body. And there isn't one major piece of legislation to which his name is attached to, and he won a great reputation, and he was, I think, a truly great senator.
Well, Mr. Harkness.
Mr. Farley, let me go back to this question of senators for a moment. You worked your way up in the Democratic Party, started as a precinct worker in Haverstraw.
Grassy Point.
And became cabinet member, national chairman. Now, what do you think of these young men who come into a state and say, make me an instant senator?
Well, times have changed. I have no quarrel with that. That isn't, in my judgment, going to deprive competent young fellows starting at the bottom of the ladder with intelligence, ability, and courage, and willing to work. It isn't going to prevent those fellows from going to the top of the ladder. I wouldn't be at all disturbed about it.
Would you join Mr. Hall in favoring a constitutional amendment?
Whether I join it or not, I think there will be a constitutional amendment proposed to correct this situation, which people have objected to.
Let me ask a question of either one of you. Do you gentlemen think that our campaigns are becoming so long in time that they're boring the public to the point of revulsion?
Well, I think they are too long, and I said repeatedly that, in my judgment, the elections are decided right after the convention. Arthur Crock, a very old friend of mine, named that opinion of mine as the Farley Law. I still believe it to be true. I think the people have made up their minds right after the convention as to what they're going to do, even though they don't give expression to their views either to the polis or anybody else. But I do think after the conventions are over, the people have pretty much made up their mind what they're going to do. There's a little shifting here and there. Those people who are undecided, who are recorded as undecided, they've made up their mind, but they haven't told anybody.
We have about less than 2 minutes, gentlemen. Mr. Broder.
I would say, excuse me.
I'd like to ask you two sages whether you think we're going to have another Kennedy running for president of the United States someday, and if so, which one?
Well, I was going to say to Mr. Farley, when you're speaking about it's all right for a young fellow like that to come in, I was going to say I think $10 million helps. And in my opinion, we are, if the law isn't changed, we're going to see more and more of it.
No, I don't know whether we are going to have or not, but if we can have a Kennedy who was named for president, who could be elected president and be the kind of a president that the late John F. Kennedy was, this country would be fortunate.
Mr. Harkness?
Yes, I would like to ask you gentlemen this, a very brief answer. The Commission on Campaign Expenses estimates that $200 million being spent in politics in this country this year. Shouldn't we have some kind of control?
Well, we have 50 states, and our states, thank God, are still autonomous in that respect. So no one can exactly tell how much they're spending. And I would say the Goldwater campaign on the national level is going to cost $12 million, and more than likely the Johnson somewhere around the same figure.
Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Farley, there are many people who believe that Governor Scranton or Richard Nixon would have run a better campaign than Goldwater and gotten more votes. What's your opinion?
I think either one of them would have, because I don't think that the opposition would develop against them as did against Goldwater. Senator Goldwater, in my judgment, was at his highest point before he made his acceptance speech, and from that time on, he went downhill.
What do you
think,
Mr. Hall?
Gentlemen, I'm sorry to have to interrupt, but I see that our time is up. Thank you very much, Mr. Farley and Mr. Hall, for being with us.
Thank you, Ned Brooks. In just a moment, we'll tell you how you can get a copy of this week's Meet the Press interview. The Federal Bar Association reminds us that freedom depends on the rule of law. And here to help promote respect for the law and for those who enforce it is General Curtis LeMay of the United States Air Force.
Our great country is built on change and progress. However, there are certain basic principles by which we are all bound. Among these are the concept that we are a nation of free men, bound together by the laws of the land, and that the military services function under control of the duly constituted government. These precepts are cornerstones of our American way of life. Members of the Air Force have solemnly sworn that they will support and defend the Constitution of the United States, the fundamental law of our land. We dedicate our labors and our lives to this end.
You have just heard General Curtis LeMay speaking in behalf of the Federal Bar Association in support of its Law Observance Program. Now more details on Meet the Press. Today's guests were James A. Farley and Leonard W. Hall. And the panel consisted of Lawrence Spivak, Edward Folliard of the Washington Post, David Broder of the Washington Star, and Richard Harkness of NBC News. For a printed copy of today's Meet the Press interview, send 10 cents in coin and a stamped self-addressed envelope to Merkle Press, M-E-R-K-L-E, Merkle Press, 809 Channing Street, Northeast, Washington, D.C. How'd you like to get a check from the Treasury Department every 6 months? Well, here's all you have to do. Buy Series E United States Savings Bonds. These bonds pay interest as it's earned twice a year for 10 years, and the checks are delivered to your door. It's a great way to put your money to work for you in a guaranteed investment. Order your H bonds through your bank in denominations of $500 and up. Meet the Press will be heard again next week at this same time when our guest will be another headline personality.
This is Frank McGee, and I'll be a part of the news teams headed by Chet Huntley and David Brinkley to bring you fast and accurate coverage of the election night returns Tuesday on NBC Radio and Television.
Starting at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.